on ABC Local Radio, Radio Australia and the World Wide Web. This is Sunday Nights with John Cleary.
Hi there, welcome to the program. Well, do Australian freedoms need protecting? This week, the federal government announced a renewed discussion on a Bill of Rights for Australia. Well, a Charter of Rights, perhaps, including the appointment of a National Human Rights Consultation to be conducted over the next 6 months. The suggestion of a Charter of Rights has already divided political allies, and it could also raise questions for religion, particularly when religious practices may differ from the norms of the broader society. Is this new proposed legislation about the rights of minority, or is it more to do with the tyranny of the majority? Is this equality before the law, or have some have characterised it a villain's charter? That's our discussion this evening, and you're welcome to join our panel in just a few minutes' time. In our second hour, we'll be joined by a fighter for human dignity of a quite different sort. Jeannie Mock is a Brisbane-based activist who has sought to free Christianity of its waspish tint and found herself a prime mover for multicultural and Indigenous issues both within the church and a wider society. That's Jeannie Mock in about an hour's time. Then it's the Midnight Inquisition, the next instalment of The Good Life. Noel may have some figgy pudding for us, some music for Christmas, and then Frank Sheehan will join us in the chat room. But let us begin with a song, and this is Elvis Costello and the Impostors with a group called the Crescent City Horns from the album The River in Reverse, a song by Alan Toussaint, Freedom for the Stallion.
Freedom for the stallion, freedom for the mare in a colt, freedom for the baby child who has not grown old enough to vote. Lord have mercy, what you gonna do about the people who are praying to you? They got men making laws that destroy other men. They made money, God, it's a dark ocean. Oh Lord, you got to help us find a way. Big ship sailing, slaves all chained and bound, heading for you're gonna do about the people who are praying to you. They got men making laws that destroy other men. They made money, God, it's a dark ocean. Oh Lord, you got to help us find a way. Other men out, ignoring maybe whispers and killing maybe shouts. Oh Lord, you got to help us find a way. Oh Lord, you got to help them find a way. Oh Lord, you got to help us find a way.
Elvis Costello, Freedom for the Stallion. A song that's emblematic of tonight's program in a way. You're with John Cleary on Sunday nights on ABC Radio around Australia and via the web around the world. Well, this week, the Australian Federal Government announced a national consultation on human rights, including whether Australia should have a charter or bill of rights, either in our constitution or by legislation through Parliament. The panel to conduct this consultation will be led by Catholic priest, lawyer and activist Father Frank Brennan, the son of retired Justice Sir Gerard Brennan. Other members will be former SBS newsreader Mary Costakidis, former Australian Federal Police Commissioner Mick Palmer, and Aboriginal barrister Tammy Williams. Well, right now, we're pleased to introduce the former Federal Police Commissioner Mick Palmer to introduce the matter to us. Mick Palmer, welcome to Sunday Nights.
Good evening, John. How are you?
Very well. Mick, you're somebody who, could I imagine, could find lots to do with your life, having retired from a job with the responsibilities of Federal Police Commissioner a couple of years ago. Why did this entice you back into the public arena?
Well, I have been sort of working part-time, but it's an issue that the issue of human rights is one that's, I think, pretty important to a lot of people and pretty close to my heart and directly relevant, of course, to much of my working life in terms of the sort of job I had. So I was attracted to it when the approach was made, and listening to your introduction, I was really attracted to it on the basis that there was no pre-position. Had this been simply a case of asking the question, what sort of bill do we need, rather than, you know, do we need a bill, I probably would have rethought it, because I think it's an open question. But it's a very important issue, and I think we can only benefit from a wide consultative sort of discussion of the issues concerned in terms of, you know, what are the human rights and responsibilities that most concern us, and to what extent do we feel they are or are not being as well protected as they should be.
So just what's the series of consultations intended to do?
I think the whole idea of the process, and we've yet to meet as you're talking to somebody, obviously, that has only just joined the consultative group, and we've yet to have our first meeting, so we haven't put too much flesh on the bone, but the whole process is aimed at seeking the widest range of views that we can, speaking not only to people, and obviously that will include special interest groups, but people right across the spectrum in terms of broader society, mainstream society. Both in the capital cities and in regional areas across Australia to, I think, as far as possible, assess what is the mood within Australia. Are there some common threads? Are there issues that are more important to people than others? If so, what are they? Both in terms of the rights and responsibilities that ought to be both protected and promoted, and also the way by which perhaps improvements could be made.
You have until July next year, and I understand... The panel will be on the road, literally with town meetings. And what forms do you imagine this consultation will take place? I mean, you have people able to make written submissions, come to public meetings. It's going to involve a fairly arduous workload for you guys, I imagine.
Probably. We're supported by a secretariat who will be able to, you know, attend to a lot of the mechanics and at least get things in order for us to then give some quality attention to. It won't just be the Gang of Four, if you like. Obviously, but yes, it's a combination of those things. There's a website that's been set up already into which people can give information, have their say, if you like. Obviously, written submissions will be received, I think, until the end of May or 29th of May. Obviously, there'll be a range of sort of round table or open forum consultations. The consultative group will think carefully about where those meetings ought to be staged and the sort of approaches that we make to make sure that we get the widest range of views and the widest participation that we can, I think, is the issue here. It really is important, I think, to make sure that we're not, if you like, serving the human rights of some at the expense of others.
Yes.
To get the widest possible views.
Will your website be the sort of central focal point for people who want to go and get information about when hearings are coming to their town and how they can make submissions and all that sort of thing?
Yes, I think so. That's being put together by the Attorney General Department, but as I understand it, that will be the case. That'll be the central point of contact, if you like, and it'll be certainly, I would imagine it will be supported probably by newspaper advertisements and the like. But it will be the central point of contact.
We'll make sure we put a link to it on our website. Mick Palmer, thank you very much for joining us and introducing Sunday night listeners to the concept of the consultation on human rights. A roadshow coming to your town sometime over the next 6 months. Former Federal Police Commissioner Mick Palmer, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, John.
You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia. John Cleary with you. We've just heard from former Federal Police Commissioner Mick Palmer, who will be one of those leading the consultation on human rights, a possible Charter of Rights or Bill of Rights for Australia. hearings to be held around the country over the next 6 months and a report to be given to government around July the 31st, 2009. Well, in a few moments' time, we'll be joined by a live panel, including Associate Professor Carolyn Evans of Melbourne University, Brigadier Jim Wallace of the Australian Christian Lobby, and the Reverend Eleni Poulos of the Uniting Church of Australia. But before we do, the idea of a Charter of Rights has not been met with universal acclamation. Surprisingly, it's dividing people on both sides of politics. Former Labor Premier of New South Wales, Bob Carr, quickly emerged as one of the most vociferous opponents of the whole idea of a Charter of Rights. And here's what the former Premier had to say to Eleanor Hall on the ABC's World Today program on Wednesday.
Mr. Carr, you've warned that a Bill of Rights for Australia is a trap that won't protect human rights. Why do you say that?
Well, the United States has had a Bill of Rights since 1789, and it had that Bill of Rights for 150 years before American blacks in the South could get a vote. The most eloquent Bill of Rights in the world was, of course, in Stalin's 1936 Constitution. Freedom arises from the instinctive feel of a people for freedom of the press, freedom of association, not from a document. America's had a Bill of Rights lodged in its Constitution, and it still had all the abuses of Guantanamo Bay.
But it may not work perfectly in every circumstance, but surely a Bill of Rights puts some protection against fundamental injustices.
Well, there's no evidence of that. And what is absolutely fascinating now is that on the same day Australia's launched an inquiry into this subject, you've got a consensus emerging in the United Kingdom that their Bill of Rights needs to be either repealed completely or comprehensively rewritten. Why is that? It's because a statutory Bill of Rights in the United Kingdom has discredited the whole concept of human rights. A friend of mine who's a member of the Labour Party from Birmingham says that when his working class constituents see youngsters causing havoc in the street, committing acts of vandalism, for example, or intimidating older people, one of the passers-by will say something like, oh, the police won't do anything about it because it'll be an interference with their human rights. I think it's extraordinary that on the very day we've had this consultation announced in Australia, you've had a consensus in the United Kingdom that something has to be done about a charter, a Bill of Rights, that has discredited the whole concept of human rights.
But do you agree with that? I mean, do you agree that putting in place a Bill of Rights here in Australia would discredit the concept of human rights?
Well, it's happened in the United Kingdom because of the way it's given extraordinary powers, taken powers in an extraordinary fashion from elected parliaments and put them in the hands of non-elected judges. And that is the nub of the argument. There's no version of a Charter of Rights or of a constitutional Bill of Rights that hasn't had the effect of shifting power-making from parliaments to non-elected judges.
Now, you speak, of course, as the former head of government, but proponents argue that it's not about judges taking over political power, but about putting a human rights check on governments. Is that such a bad thing?
Well, that's ridiculous. Of course it's about judges having extra powers. You can't bring down a statement with commitments to all sorts of vague concepts, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, freedom of association, once it has such vague expressions set out in the form of a charter. Then of course it's going to be a matter of how that is interpreted by judges. And in one step, you're transferring decision-making from an elected parliament to non-elected judges. If we're going to be serious about it, and if we're going to ask Australians to revise the way their government works, then make it a matter for a referendum.
Australia is the only country in the democratic world that doesn't have a Bill of Rights.
I think that's a ridiculous argument. When in Canada, a court can overrule a provincial government because the provincial government creates incentives for doctors to serve in rural areas, the court overrules that because it's an interference with freedom of travel. Where in the United Kingdom, a court says the police can't interfere with a group of gypsies or travellers who pull down the wall, the fence, to private property and occupy the land because it's an interference with freedom of movement. Australia's entitled to say with pride, we don't have these absurd distortions, we don't have these unintended consequences. We're one of the freest countries in the world. Our freedom stands comparison with any other nation state in the world, and it rests on common law principles, it rests on parliamentary democracy, and it rests on robust freedom of speech.
Bob Carr, it's the 60th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights today. Would you have used similar arguments to oppose the adoption of the UN's Human Rights Declaration back then?
There's no analogy whatsoever. because it's not enforceable in domestic law. It represents a standard or a benchmark that countries should try to reach. And Australia, based on the common law, based on all those principles and conventions I've just referred to, easily exceeds the benchmark. In fact, if you compare our status and our standing with that of the United States, which has got a full constitutional Bill of Rights, Australia has got better outcomes. In the end, it's the political character and culture of a country that determines how free it is, not a Bill of Rights that is there to wrench decision-making away from elected people to non-elected judges.
Bob Carr, thanks very much for joining us.
Pleasure.
So there you have it. Former Premier of New South Wales, Bob Carr. Enough of those meddling judges. Let's leave our rights in the hands of those saintly guardians of public trust, the New South Wales right of the Labor Party. Such is the nature of political discussion. What of the impact of such a charter when it comes to discrete groups within society then? Take religion, for instance. Are there issues relating to gender or education or health central to one particular religious tradition that could fall foul of a general set of principles? Take the two most recent defining causes of conservative orthodoxy, homosexuality and abortion. Where do they fit? Well, all of those questions and some more can be asked and answered by our panel this evening. It's good to welcome Associate Professor Carolyn Evans, the Associate Dean of Law at Melbourne University and a Deputy Director of the Centre for Comparative Constitutional Studies. Carolyn Evans, welcome to you.
Good evening, John.
Also in our studio, the Reverend Eleni Poulos, Head of Uniting Justice, the Social Justice Arm of the Uniting Church of Australia. Eleni, welcome.
Hi, John.
And on the telephone line, Brigadier Jim Wallace, Managing Director of the Australian Christian Lobby and a former head of the SAS and somebody who knows a little bit about security and rights. Jim Wallace, welcome.
How do you do, John? Good.
Thanks for joining us. Now, this issue can be handled either at a trivial level or a deeply serious level, and for most people, I guess it had elements of both. Carolyn Evans, first to you, in its most general sense, what is being argued for here?
Well, at the moment, what's been set up is a consultation, so I suppose we don't have a particular model, but there are two basic models that have been used around the world. One is, as former Premier Bob Carr pointed out, the constitutionalised Bill of Rights. A Bill of Rights such as the United States has, although that is a rather old Bill of Rights. It's not particularly typical of modern democracies, many of which developed their Bill of Rights over the last 50 years. So these constitutional Bill of Rights do give considerable power to judges, including most often power to strike down legislation that's inconsistent with human rights.
And this is written into the iron law of the Constitution, so can only be modified with great difficulty.
Well, that's right, although it can only be written into the Constitution with great difficulty too in Australia, yes, because it would require a referendum, and referendums aren't very successful in Australia. But the more likely model here, particularly given that Father Frank Brennan is running this committee, would be a statutory Bill of Rights like the United Kingdom and New Zealand has, where I have to say there is no consensus that there has been a failure. There are certainly some politicians who take that point of view. A statutory Bill of Rights requires that legislation be interpreted, if it can be, and not if it can't be, if it can be, in light of human rights, and to give a human rights compatible interpretation. And it also allows judges to give remedies to people whose rights have been abused by the executive. And while parts of the executive are elected, we have to remember the vast majority of members of the executive we come into contact with on a daily basis are just as unelected and far less accountable than judges.
Yes, and this Charter of Rights, as I understand it, because it goes through Parliament, would always be subject to Parliament. That is, Parliament could choose to change it or modify it at any time it chose under the terms agreed.
Absolutely. Unless it's in the Constitution, then one Act of Parliament has no greater status than any other Act of Parliament. If it wasn't working 2 weeks later, at least in theory, it could be abolished by the same Parliament that enacted it.
Yes, I understand the whole question of a Bill of Rights was argued at the time of Federation and was not proceeded with on the somewhat dubious grounds that it could overturn the White Australia policy.
Well, that's right. We've always had an interesting ambivalence right from the time of Federation. On the one hand, and this was also said at Federation, we were decent British people who would behave decently and common law values and so forth. And then on the other hand, well, we want to continue with racist policies. And I think we see similar sort of arguments continuing today. We're one of the freest nations on earth, but we want to be able to continue to do things that might in fact be in breach of human rights. So it's an argument with a lot of tension in it, and it's been running in Australia for over 100 years.
Eleni Poulos, why do we need a charter at this particular time? What do you think has brought the issue into focus?
I think that Australia has a very proud record of upholding human rights in our country and upholding them in a global forum. However, we've seen recently that policies have been enacted which actually undermine human rights. We've seen thousands of children, for example, held in detention centres. That's counter to our human rights obligations under international conventions. We've got mandatory sentencing in the Northern Territory, which has led to, example, one 21-year-old Aboriginal Australian was sentenced to 1 year for stealing cordial and biscuits because it was his third strike. That's pretty outrageous. The right to vote was challenged by some 2006 legislation which removed the right to vote from all full-time prisoners.
How would the current intervention be affected by a Charter of Rights or a Bill of Rights?
Well, as Carolyn was saying, the Parliament, under the Charter of Rights that is most likely to be put forward as a working model in Australia, a Charter of Rights would put pressure and onus on the public service and the government as they were preparing legislation to look at that legislation through a human rights lens, if you like. So they would have to try and uphold our human rights obligations as they exist under international law in the development of that policy. The Parliament, as it was then looking at certain acts of legislation, would be required, again, to look at that legislation through a human rights lens. Now, they would still, however, have the power to enact legislation that was not compatible with that Human Rights Act. What the Human Rights Act does, however, I believe, it would force both the executive and the parliament to explain to the Australian public why in any particular case they had decided to override a Human Rights Act.
So it would just force more intense scrutiny when such a decision was being made. Jim Wallace, from your perspective, what should people be concerned about when such arguments are mounted?
Yeah, well, I think Bob Carr's articulated it very well. And I think, though, there's a very basic premise here which I'd turn to, and that is that rights, you know, human rights, are a result of, if you're a secularist, perhaps you see it as a result of your humanity. They accrue to you because of your humanity. Certainly from a Christian point of view, we see them as God-given. And therefore, they're not able to be given or taken away by governments. They're inalienable rights. And as soon as you allow governments to give rights, then they can as easily take them away. And I think this is a very basic you know, sort of principle that we've got to observe here, that we're allowing government, we're saying that rights are something that can be given so they can equally be taken away. I don't agree, I'm afraid, with Carolyn on the point that, you know, we've got this sort of tension where on the one hand we want to be racist and on the other hand we want to have human rights. You know, I think it's nothing to do with that. I think it's simply, as Bob Carr said, that we don't want to see sort of power in society handed over to unelected judges, you know. And I'd have to say, too, that with Eleni, that, you know, they have detention centres in the UK where they're still trying to get the children out. We've got our children out of detention centres. We have people in the UK who can be detained with their anti-terror laws there for 42 days. You can only be detained for 7 days without a charge in Australia. So, you know, this notion that we need this Bill of Rights or a Charter of Human Rights, which no one's made a great call for, except, you know, I'd have to say, really the latte set, I think is quite fallacious. You know, it's something that's been generated, but I don't think there's a wide need for it or a great call for it.
Carolyn Evans, do you see any potential dangers? What are the dangers that one would need to be aware of going into such a process?
I think the key concern that is generally expressed is around the role of judges and the democratically elected Parliament, and one that Bob Carr suggested, and also Jim has just made the point about. And it's not a trivial point. I think it is undeniable that any Bill of Rights, statutory or constitutional, does shift some power to the judiciary. Now, you can say that that's undemocratic if you think that democracy means ticking a ballot paper once every 3 or 4 years and those people then making whatever decisions they like. You can see it, however, as democratic in a different way, to have a series of checks and balances, and different parts of the arms of government, the executive, the judiciary, the legislature, all playing a distinct role. But you would have to think seriously about what the role of judges will be under a Bill of Rights. And I can see, certainly, that some religious people or religious groups might have concerns about some of the outcomes that might come under a Bill of Rights.
Yes, I want to turn to those specifically religious issues in just a moment. But just proceeding along the general concerns line for the moment, one of the arguments put forward by those who support a legislative charter of rights when the discussion about power to judges comes up, is that, look, yes, it does mean giving judges not power, but at least encouraging parlementarians, as Eleni outlined, to at least look at legislation through a certain lens when they come to address that legislation. And this is really a slight redress of the fact that Parliament over the recent decades has lost much of its power to scrutinise by virtue of the growth in power of the executive, so that Parliament isn't a static institution, that it is changing, the way it operates is changing, and what's being proposed here is simply a slight change to counter the growing power of the executive.
Yes, absolutely. I think this debate is often put in the false terms of judges versus the legislature. In many ways, though, the real concerns arise with executive power, which is extensive, and while it has some level of supervision, certainly doesn't have the level of supervision that it does in many countries. In the United Kingdom, we've seen the Joint Standing Committee on Human Rights really become quite an important force in the United Kingdom Parliament, with some very thoughtful, thorough, intelligent reports that the government is forced to take seriously, as often governments simply disregard parliamentary committees and reports. But the government is forced to some degree to take it more seriously because they know that if they completely disregard that report, it may well come back to bite them in the courts. Arguably, that strengthens the hand of Parliament rather than diminishes it.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio Around Australia. We're talking about a bill or charter of rights for Australia, positives and negatives. 1300 800 222 is our number. If you've got some questions of our panel or some inquiries or opinions you'd like to offer, then please feel free to give us a call now from wherever you are in Australia. 1300 800 222. Our panel consists of the Reverend Eleni Poulos of Uniting Justice, the social justice arm of the Uniting Church of Australia. Brigadier Jim Wallace of the Australian Christian Lobby, former head of the SAS and having a deep knowledge of security issues, and Associate Professor Carolyn Evans of Melbourne University and Deputy Director of the Centre for Comparative Constitutional Studies at Melbourne University. Let's now turn to the issue of religion, the specifics of religion. Carolyn Evans first, on the religious question. What specific issues could religious groups have reasonable apprehensions about?
Well, some religious groups will have apprehensions about issues around abortion, same-sex relationships, and I think in many ways one of the ones that will probably come up earliest will be around religious freedom to discriminate. To discriminate, for example, in employment, in the way that schools take on students, and that will raise complex issues for the courts in their resolution. So there are a series of the ordinary sort of social justice issues that the United States Supreme Court has been particularly notable on.
So this will crystallise a number of issues that have been simmering in the background in Australian social affairs anyway.
Absolutely. I don't think it will particularly create new ones, but it may give us a new lens to look at those issues through. Now, some religious people will welcome that new lens and see it in a very positive light. Others will be more concerned about it.
Jim Wallace.
Yeah, well, I think this is definitely one of the concerns, of course. Look at the fact that when someone's deciding on a human rights charter, it's a matter of whose human rights are they deciding on and when do they decide they begin, for instance, you know. Now, in the UN Declaration of the Rights of the Child, it's very specific that they're talking about the rights of a child before birth as well as after birth. And yet both the ACT and Victoria, when they have their Charter of Human Rights, they just decided, so it's still a subjective decision, they just decided that life wouldn't start, or those human rights wouldn't begin until after birth, you know. So, you know, these human rights charters are still up, they're still depend on a subjective decision by someone as to whose rights.
And ultimately, all law, though, depends on subjective decision-making, doesn't it?
No, that's right. But I think that if we've got specific laws, as we do, to cover a range of specific situations, then we should have the benefit of having those laws debated in among our elected delegates, you know, not among or decided by unelected judiciary.
But this point, surely, Jim Rollis, that the point about that's being made here is that we won't be going for a Bill of Rights. We will be going for, probably, a Charter of Rights, which is always going to be subject to the interpretation of Parliament.
Yeah, but
it's just that it provides a legislative framework.
Yeah, but it's been pointed out by a number of commentators on this, and I agree 100%, is it takes an extremely brave politician to reject a determination by judges, and as Janet Albrightson said this week, I think it's one that was draped in the deceptive language of human rights. It'll take extremely brave legislators to stand against that.
And, well, if we have legislators who are neither brave nor principled, why should we be deferential to them to the degree that you seem to be suggesting, Jim?
I'm sorry, say again?
Well, you seem to be suggesting that our parliamentarians can't be trusted to make difficult decisions in these cases, but we should be deferential to them generally.
No,
and that's why we can't have a charter.
No, it's not a case of that at all. It's exactly what Jack Straw's talking about, and he talks about a nervousness in people because when they get a decision from judges, which is wrapped in this language of human rights, it's very hard to actually stand up against it. And yet the reality is if those particular issues were processed through democratically elected people in parliaments, they probably wouldn't get a run. So I think it is a very, very important point, and we shouldn't, as we saw in the case of Canada, just say, well, it's only a charter of human rights, so let's let it go. And so we do that in Canada, and then a number of years later, of course, we get this thing actually turned into a constitutional charter of human rights.
Eleni Poulos, can I bring you into the conversation here? What Jim Wallace is pointing to are concerns that have been legitimately raised. I mean, Bob Carr referred to Canada and their experience, as did Jim Wallace, and Bob Carr also referred to the experience in Britain, where Jack Straw, who has been a champion of human rights over the years, has recently said, look, in England this is proving something of a villain's charter in some places. This question of the intimidation, the power of intimidation of parliamentarians, how seriously do you take it? And do you think there are quite legitimate issues which religious bodies should be wary of?
I find Bob Carr's responses and people who share his responses strangely hysterical. I actually don't understand what their issues are, because Bob Carr's a very smart man. Bob would understand that we will never get in Australia a human rights bill like we have in the US. It's just never going to happen. I'm also concerned about Jim's response to human rights language as though it is something to be feared. I mean, I'm not sure what there is to fear in the fact that everyone has a right to freedom from slavery. Everyone has a right to freedom from torture. Everyone has a right to vote. They don't actually sound particularly scary to me. And they're the core batches of rights that we're probably looking at in Australia, civil and political rights, those very basic things about how we are as citizens in democracy.
What about it when it comes to voluntary associations, such as religious groups? Mm. And the I think the very real issue that many religious groups would have on who they employ, on how their teaching can be implemented.
Yes, and I think And that's part of the reason why we're having a consultation. So it is really important that religious groups every Australian gets involved in this consultation, because what we have is an opportunity to put a point of view that says, okay, we want some things exempted. And we can see in the Victorian charter that abortion has been exempted from the Victorian Charter of Rights. So, you know, Jim's point about abortion in Victoria doesn't hold up in that respect.
Jim Wallace.
That's not right, actually, because the very fact that it doesn't deal with the rights of a child before birth means that it's not an issue under the Charter of Rights, so it's very selective.
But, now, Jim, the Catholic Church actually called for that exemption.
Sorry?
The Catholic Church actually pushed for that exemption on the very basis that you're now saying that it's not terrible that it's excluded.
Not in the form in which it's been given. I mean, you've oversimplified the whole issue. There are all sorts of examples of these Charters of Rights being used to perpetrate the ridiculous, you know. Now, for instance, one of the things referred to by Jack Straw is the fact that pedophiles have a greater right to privacy, it would seem, under their Charter of Rights than the public do to know who pedophiles are. Now, invariably, there are collisions of rights. And if you have a Charter of Human Rights, then you remove from the Parliament the right to decide, the elected Parliament, to decide where the emphasis of those collision of rights should be.
No, you don't actually, Jim. You don't remove it from the Parliament at all. You actually put it back into the heart of democracy. You put those discussions where the executive, the Parliament and the judiciary actually have a conversation with each other, and the final say will always remain with the Parliament.
No, it's not actually true, because this pressure, this intimidation that John referred to a moment ago is real. And in fact, the great strength of our democratic societies is the separation of powers. And a number of commentators have said, and I agree with them, that what you're seeing is the judiciary being made almost political by having a Charter of Rights, because it starts to make political decisions. So you're actually removing the distinction between those two, the judiciary and the executive. And we don't want that. We want to see a separation of powers, because that is, in fact, what guarantees our democratic process.
Carolyn Evans, to what extent is there a danger of a blurring of separation of powers in such an issue?
Look, there is some issue around separation of powers, particularly if the Parliament, as the Parliament often does, decides to legislate in abstract terms and sometimes quite deliberately leaves difficult decisions to the judiciary. We can see that, for example, in abortion in many states in Australia. It's all very well to talk about the poor Parliament being intimidated by a group of thuggish judges. Sometimes it's very convenient for Parliament to leave those issues to the judiciary. If the legislature, however, is clear and unambiguous about the way in which it wants rights conflicts or indeed even wants to override rights in a particular case, under Charters of Rights, the Parliament does have the final word on that. And I would just note, I mean, a little bit along the lines of Lainey's concerns about hysteria, almost every democratic country in the world has much stronger forms of Bills of Rights than we're talking about. It doesn't lead to the overnight termination of democracy, the downfall of the separation of powers. The separation plays out in a slightly different way. We have a slightly different form of democracy with some different strengths and some different weaknesses. But there is, you know, the idea that this will fundamentally undermine the separation of powers, I think, is a nonsense.
Jim Wallace.
Could I just ask, I mean, what is the advantage when you have a constitutional Bill of Rights in the United States and yet you don't give to African Americans their rights for some 150 years later? You know, how can you say that there's an advantage in a Bill of Rights? And yet we see all sorts of nonsense as a result. We see situations where, for instance, terrorists, you know, can't be pursued to the degree that they should be because of their rights under British laws. And it's one of the points of Jake Straw's comment about this being a sort of Charter of Rights for villains. So I just can't see when you have this balance of a Bill of Rights, even one that's a constitutional Bill of Rights, not delivering the rights that it should, and on the other hand, you have a series of nonsenses coming out of them. We have these right around the world, that you would go for a Charter of Rights.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio around Australia. Time to take your calls. 1300 800 222. A Charter of Rights for Australia, good thing or bad thing? Tyranny of the minority or rights for all? What do you think. 1300 800 222. Our guests this evening are the Reverend Eleni Poulos from the Uniting Church of Australia, Associate Professor Carolyn Evans of Melbourne University Law School and Deputy Director at the Centre for Comparative Constitutional Studies, and Brigadier Jim Wallace, Managing Director of the Australian Christian Lobby. And of course, you. Let's take your calls. Ellie in Fairfield is first on the line. Hello, Ellie. How are you?
Okay. I came to Australia about 40 years ago from Africa because I liked the freedom here, the freedom of association and things like that. But I'd like to give a few examples of the way the situation has deteriorated in the balance between the cosmopolitan human rights benchmark of desired behavior and its poor interface with the common rational man, and in our secular societies, in our, that relate to our sovereign nation states. Here I used to feel very free, but now I don't feel so free for many reasons. The I believe that the taxpayer citizen, their courts and things are being hijacked like an alternative casino in the name of rights. We're a secular state, and abortion should be one's personal affair, and the church can preach to whoever they like.
So
move away from that.
Ellie, are you speaking in favour or against a Bill of Rights?
Well, it depends. We've got to think it out further. The international human rights things haven't done sufficient work and haven't extended their international cosmopolitan benchmarks adequately. Now, we wouldn't have so many economic refugees if the IMF were controlled by a Bill of Rights which said they had to stop the money laundering and make the people,
Ellie,
give back their money to the states.
Ellie, you're taking this conversation in very interesting directions, but ones which I don't think we can pursue this evening. So I'm going to have to leave it there as a comment because we've got lots of calls on the board. Thanks for your observations, and you're opening up a very wide discussion, which I'm sure all of us would love to participate in, but we're not taking this one into the arena of international law this evening, except in the specific area of perhaps the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. But we do take your point. Thank you very much for joining us. Let's go to David in Wellington. Hello, David. Good to have you with us. What would you like to say?
Well, I don't think we should have one, because taking the American Constitution, it has 27 amendments to the Bill of Rights, and the British one is only 10 years old and it's obsolete now. So are we going to let the politicians decide what a Bill of Rights is? Because they will just follow party lines like they always do.
So your suggestion is we leave it with common law, and common law
yeah,
will work its rough way through.
That's right. And in our constitution, we have two forms of considered in there. One is the parliament, and the other one is the judiciary. They're the ones that have to make the decisions, not politicians who work on whims like the Tampa incident and the David Icke incident, which was a disgraceful for Australia. The British were trying to get their men back home, but what did the Australians do? Nothing, until they had to. And that's what will go, what will continue to happen in this country under the system we've got.
But you're suggesting there should be no change?
No change, until they can come up with a better idea.
Some are suggesting that this Bill of Rights is the better idea, or a Charter of Rights, I should say. Eleni, you want to comment on what Bill had said?
Yes, I'm curious about all of this discussion about the UK Bill of Rights being obsolete. My understanding is that Jack Straw's made some comment, a few other people have made some comment. The Tory leader has said that he would rework the UK Bill of Rights into a homegrown Bill of Rights, because at the moment what it does is that it piggybacks off the European Union Bill of Rights. So again, in the UK, it's a very different situation because the UK Bill of Rights is connected to the European Union Charter of Rights. So, you know, and so what the Tory leader is talking about is a reworking into a homegrown Bill of Rights that rises out of the values of the community, which is exactly what we're talking about here.
David, thanks for your observations. We'll take another call. And it's Richard in Sorrento. Hello, Richard. Welcome to you. What would you like to say at this stage in the conversation?
I'd just like to make an observation. At the start of your program, there was a gentleman which talked about we're going to set up a committee and we're going to talk to everybody.
That was Mick Palmer, yes, the former Federal Police Commissioner.
Yeah, converse widely and we're going to do grand things and come out with a view. Yet every one of your speakers tonight has a preconceived notion as to what they think the right result should be, and the opportunity for them to talk to each other and convince the other that they should have another point of view seems pretty useless.
Well, that's called free discussion, is it not?
Well, it's called a waste of money, too.
Well, it's a waste of your public resources on the ABC, if you interpreted that way.
Now I think maybe that's exposing the other waste of money. That is to have a talk fest for some 6 months about something that nobody will change their view on.
You don't think people will change their view?
No. I don't know, but I can say the evidence of the program tonight is that the people there participating won't change their view.
John, can I just respond and say there have been a number of public inquiries and consultations around Australia with regards to how to better protect our human rights. There was a fabulous one done in WA led by Fred Chaney. And if you look at the report from that consultation, what you find happened was that people rocked up to the committee and spoke about their experiences. And I think that's really important. That committee heard about experiences of families in nursing homes and hospitals and, you know, farmers dealing with corporations. You know, these are basic experiences of all of us, and it's important that the committee hears those stories.
Carolyn Evans, just on the religion point that we were making earlier, people have expressed concerns about religious organisations being able to employ people on religious grounds, on churches and education and the criteria for teachers in schools. Muslim communities, Christian communities, Jewish communities all would be concerned about these. Do you see these as being insurmountable thresholds to a Charter of Rights?
No, not at all. The basic issue here is already dealt with in discrimination legislation in all states and at Commonwealth level. Whether we have a Charter of Rights or not, I think that discussion is going to be an ongoing one, and one that parliaments and the courts are going to have to look at. And I should just say, my colleague Beth Gaze and I have been doing quite a lot of research into religious schools and their employment practices, talking to a lot of principals from religious schools. And there's a great deal of diversity of opinion out there, even inside any given religious community, about whether their exemptions from the normal discrimination laws are a good thing or a bad thing. Many principals feel that it ties their hands in all sorts of ways and leads to them and their teachers potentially being, for example, intimidated by various groups of students or parents. So this is a debate that we will have in the context of our discrimination laws, I imagine, over the next 3 to 5 years anyway. The Charter of Rights might help us to see it in a holistic way where we take into account important rights like freedom of religion as well as rights such as freedom from discrimination.
John, I think it's a very important point needs to be made here because, that sounds very very flowery and positive, but the reality is that there has just been, a month after the introduction of the Victoria Charter of Human Rights, suddenly we had a review of those exemptions that Victorian church schools and churches had on things like employment. Now, obviously it was the trigger of the Charter of Human Rights which led to this, So I think that churches and church schools and organisations have every right to think that if a Charter of Human Rights comes in, that these exemptions will be under threat immediately. And I might say that this is where, again, you have this problem of rights which are supposedly assured under international conventions and UN conventions such as the ICCPR, where churches have the right to practice their religion, which includes teaching, includes proselytising. And yet these rights would be, as they are in Victoria, I believe will be in Victoria, these rights are in danger once you get a Charter of Human Rights that's domestically spun for domestic purposes.
We've got one more call on the line from Brisbane. Lots of calls on the board, but one more from Brisbane for the moment. It's White in Brisbane. How are you? And welcome to the program. What is it that that you'd like to say?
Well, first of all, hello to everyone. Look, I'm an American who's lived here in this country for about 35 years. I am very much for a Bill of Rights for Australia. And I'm for a Bill of Rights that is constitutionally enshrined and that protects those most basic freedoms and rights that are we as human beings are entitled to no matter where we live. I want to see a Bill of Rights because I don't want to see what happened to asylum seekers in this country, let alone what's happened to Aboriginal people from white settlement on, continue to happen here.
And you see a Bill of Rights as something that potentially will protect those fundamental rights?
It's not a cure-all, but it's the best we've got, and we're the only Western country in the entire world without one.
Thank you very much for your observations. Let me raise one other issue. We're rapidly running out of time, but I'll get all three of you to comment on just one final observation. Paul Kelly wrote a piece in The Australian yesterday which suggested a number of things about a Bill of Rights, the dangers of, but one of the things he did suggest was that this would become a lawyer's picnic, that what you're inviting is a litigious, the increased rise of a litigious society, and we already have various investigative bodies oversighting executive government falling over each other, from ombudsman to all sorts of rights bodies, and all we're going to do is really become a more litigious and less humane society. Jim Wallace first.
Yeah, well, look, I think the experience is that that's the case. And certainly, of course, after these things have been introduced in places like New Zealand, you see a peak and, you know, that tends to be a spike. But I think the general experience is that you do have more litigation and it is in pursuit of rights as people see them being guaranteed under these charters of rights, and they're not always supportable.
You know? Carol, Jim, I'll have to break in. We're rapidly running out of time. Carolyn Evans, brief comment from you on the lawyer's picnic.
There's been very little rise in litigation in the United Kingdom, and indeed after the spike in New Zealand, no real evidence of a rise in litigation. The question is not whether there will be more cases in court, but if there are more cases in court, are they good cases where people are getting the rights that they're entitled to?
Mm. Eleni Poulos.
Human rights are a tool for justice, and I think it's natural that Christian churches and religious groups who seek to uphold the dignity of human people, who seek to build communities that are held together by the idea of mutual respect and justice for all, would seek to contribute positively to the consultation and not be fearful of a Bill of Rights. There's absolutely nothing to be afraid of. It is a tool for justice in this country.
If you have reservations, concerns, apprehensions, then do get in touch with the Human Rights Consultation. We'll put their details up on our website. It's time to thank our panel who have joined us tonight, come out late at night into the studios and done their best to begin a debate that I'm sure will run quite strongly through Australia over the next few months. Associate Professor Carolyn Evans, Associate Dean of Research at the Melbourne University Law School and Deputy Director of the Centre for Comparative Constitutional Studies, thank you so much. Reverend Eleni Poulos, Head of Uniting Justice, the Social Justice Arm of the Uniting Church, thank you.
Thank you, John.
And Brigadier Jim Wallace, thank you for letting us disturb your night at home. Very good of you.
Thank you very much, John. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
We'll be back shortly with more on Sunday night, and if you wish to continue this conversation, you can in the chat room with Frank Sheehan in a couple of hours' time. You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia.